month at 6 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 31st Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 4th through July 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. Performing artists this year include Beth Hart, Robert Randolph and the Family Band, Ruthie Foster, and the Mavericks, as well as annual traditions like the Bill Rhodes Harmonica Blow-Off, Zydeco Dance Lessons, Blue Cruises, After Parties, and much more. Again, that's the 31st Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 4th through July 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m. They call it climbing and I call it visibility. They call it coolness and I call it visibility. They call it way too rowdy, I call it finally free.
Good evening and welcome to Trans Positive. We're here again. Yay. It was a great Pride Month. I was so wonderful. Who went to Trans Pride this year?
I didn't get to go to Trans Pride, but I did march in the Pride Parade. Is my mic on?
Yeah, that's okay. Oh, okay. That's fine. Oh, great. Well, that's so wonderful. You got to go to Trans Pride, and we all just had a lot of fun. So tonight, let's go around first and introduce ourselves. Why don't you come over here, Nicolette, and we'll share mics.
Okay.
My name is Emma. I use she and her pronouns.
My name's Squid. I use she and her pronouns.
My name is Shamai. I use they pronouns.
My name is Nicolette. I use and them pronouns.
Great. And so tonight we're going to be doing something new for the first part of our show. We're going to have trans in the news. And so we're going to be talking about stuff that's happening in the news, transgender issues. And then we've got most of our show tonight is Busting the Binary. And we're here with Shamai, who's going to be talking about a bunch of stuff about busting the gender binary. So let's first go to Gwen. And Gwen, what's going on in the news?
Well, here's what's going on in the news. I pulled these things out, and this is all stuff happening in the United States. So there was, in Montana, they attempted to do a transgender bathroom ballot initiative, but it fell short, didn't even get on the ballot. So, you know, thumbs up to the people of Montana. Thank you.
Yay, thank you.
Yeah. Then in Ohio, we have a couple of Republican legislatures that want to do a law that says that if your school teacher sees you exhibiting any signs of gender dysphoria, they are to immediately contact the parents and tell them.
Well, I guess I'll have a few things to say about that.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, at one point it's like, you got to go. It's like, are you serious?
Yeah.
It's like, no. This is something your kids hide from you? This isn't lipstick. You know, you put lipstick in your pocket and put it on the way to school. This is a little bigger than that. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah, this is...
this is high on the ridiculous list.
Yeah.
That does not belong in a school system.
I think we may talk more about that later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's all in the news, ladies and gentlemen. So Starbucks is going to pay for all the surgeries that it takes for a transgender person to be comfortable.
I know, that is so exciting. They're even covering facial feminization surgery, which is for trans women. Facial feminization surgery is the thing that, like, no matter what kind of healthcare plan we're on, it's still the thing that, like, we're denied. We're told, oh, if you want facial feminization surgery, that's just cosmetic. And it's like, believe me, if you're a trans woman, it's not cosmetic. It's necessary and life-saving.
Right.
Yeah. We'll definitely talk about that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Starbucks has been offering GRS since 2012. Yeah. So this is a new thing, and this covers stuff that's not covered by the health insurance.
Yeah, I know.
So, it's really popular. What do we got? Hands up for Starbucks. Mm-hmm. Thank you, folks.
Yeah.
So here's another one. There's a judge that thinks that this young transgender teen who's 15 years old needs to age, develop, and mature before she can change her name. This comes under so another wrong. Like. Are you serious? It's a name change.
Right. Exactly.
Better grow up before you change your name.
I think the judge needs to grow up.
Yeah, especially
my thoughts exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Especially if they have people changing their names to wild names out there. Does it really matter if Michael wants to become Michelle?
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So number five. So I know you guys are going to talk about this one, but being transgender is no longer classified as a mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
It's now a sexual health condition, and you'll hear more about that today.
Yes, yes, lots of talk about that.
I guess that's a good thing.
That is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is.
I'm not sure.
Well, we'll discuss that. We will discuss that. Yeah.
Yeah. It honestly, it still is a matter of opinion that goes on to whether that's going to be successful or not. But right now, the proof is in the pudding. We've got to wait for things to start progressing and moving forward. We have a step in place to try this out. So that's what's important right now.
Right. Yeah. And it never belonged in the DSM in the first place.
Yeah. Okay, we will discuss all of this, but do we have any more news?
Oh, we have a lot of news.
Okay.
We have four more items.
So we have in Iowa, a judge struck down that the Medicaid ban on transgender transition-related care. Mm. The judge said that was illegal. So that's
a victory.
Thank you, Mr. Judge. Yeah,
something good for Iowa folks can get their surgeries.
Right. Now, international news. Ta-da, all the rest of the world. 2% of the BBC staff are transgender.
That was so great. I wonder if KBOO has a higher percentage than that. I think KBOO might be better.
Right.
Maybe out doing the BBC.
We'll have to write them a note and let them know.
Hey,
so that's cool. So in the Turkish province of Antalya, couple of transgender sex workers threw a guy out of a second story window about pricing problems. Story was he got up and ran back upstairs for more. Number three, this is in the UK. Girls face a ban on skirts as schools opt for gender neutral uniforms, which happen to be pants. Hmm. Now, I got to tell you, I would be wanting to wear a skirt because I would not want to wear trousers.
How about just do away with the uniform and allow people to wear skirts or pants or whatever they want?
Exactly.
What's the problem to begin with? It's just so ridiculous. How come people are making all these rules around us?
Mm-hmm.
In Istanbul, the gay and transgender community held a rally after their Pride March was banned.
Mm. Oh, that's great.
So good
in
for
Istanbul,
them.
Yeah.
Standing up anyway.
That was awesome.
You got to have a lot of nerve to do that in Istanbul.
Yeah.
So in Spain, Angela Ponce, 26, made history when she was the crowned first Miss Universe of Spain.
Wow.
So, ta-da!
That is awesome.
Is she transgender?
Uh-huh.
Oh, great.
Wow. Oh, sorry. I missed that part. Then that's what we're talking about.
It's sort of implied.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, and so that's it for the news. But here's the last part of the news thing, and that's the Trans Woman of the Month. So this month, we're going to honor Candy Darling. She was born in 1944, died in 1974.
Mm.
She was best known as an Andy Warhol superstar. She was an author. She wrote two books, My Face for the World to See and Memoirs of an Andy Warhol Superstar. She starred in several movies, Beautiful Darling, Women in Revolt, and Flesh. There was a few more. Haven't really seen those movies, but they should be interesting. Andy Warhol movies. And so she was the subject of a couple of Lou Reed songs, Walk on the Wild Side being one. She was one of three trans women who did the Warhol Underground and the Velvet Underground.
Wow.
In New York, back in the day.
Wow.
That is awesome. I mean, that's a huge step of progression, especially, you know, being back then and then seeing that and seeing what we're seeing today. You'd think that that would be a bit more of an example. So I'm glad you pointed that out.
And there you have it.
Thank
That's
you.
That's our news session for the month.
Thank you. Why don't we take our first break, and then we'll come right back to the main part of our show.
All right.
We are back. So now I'm going to hand over the show to Nicolette and Shamai.
Shamai.
All right. So Shamai, why don't you? Okay. Shamai, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi. My name is Shamai. I am a psychology student through PCC. I just finished another one of my courses last spring term, this most recent spring term. I'm 28 years old. I reside in Portland, Oregon, and I'm very excited to be on the show tonight. In fact, my boyfriend is currently tuned in. Hi, Gary Lee.
Hi, Gary Lee. Because I know him too.
All right. So tonight we're going to talk about the busting the binary.
Yeah. So, what we're going to get into first, just for people who might not know as much as you do about this subject, what is psychology?
Psychology is the study of the mind and how it affects our daily lives.
Okay. So, because we're going to be talking about the WHO decision, what is the difference between a psychological disorder and a health condition?
I guess the best way to describe it is a psychology disorder is what happens when there are mishaps involving electrical and chemical processes in the brain, and a health condition is simply something that the body is doing, not necessarily as a result of what's going on in the brain.
Okay, so that does relate to the topic we're going to get into. First, we wanted to talk about the World Health Organization's recent decision to reclassify the gender dysphoria diagnosis in the DSM. They're taking it out of the DSM and moving it into the International Classification of Diseases as a sexual health condition. Shamai, for anyone who might not know what that means, what is the DSM and how are diagnostic decisions made?
Okay, so the DSM is it's an abbreviation. It means the Diagnostics and Statistics Manual. The DSM, the current one, is the DSM-5. It's actually been around for a very long time. It was there were a lot of changes that were made, especially in 1994. Honestly, throughout history. But currently, we're in the DSM-5. We moved out of a multi-axial system, which is basically an axis where there are five axes, one being the surface level of diagnostics, so like the clinical, what's treatable, that kind of stuff, mood disorders, personality disorders. And then axis two goes a bit deeper into it and starts talking about like what is actually the cause of these disorders, what are these disorders and what do they do, and typically these are the parts that they talk about that are non-treatable. Axis three was medical conditions and how they impact the disorder. Axis four was psychosocial and environmental factors. So basically what's going on around the person. Axis 5 was a rating scale. That rating scale is called the GAF, or Global Assessment of Functionality. And it's basically what happens of how many symptoms are present, how powerful are these symptoms. And so someone rating high in the scale wouldn't necessarily qualify so much to be diagnosed with this disability because, you know, they have a score of 100 versus if they had 20, they most definitely present a lot of symptoms and definitely have this disability. Now the DSM combines the AXIS 1 and 2, and it combines the 4 and the 5, and we're moving out of that into a spectral disorder. So we're looking at things like autism. Asperger's and ADHD are no longer their own classifications. They fall under the autistic spectrum disorder. And so, you know, you have these ranges of where people move because there's a functionality thing. And so at one point people thought that a person with a certain disability could not function with that, when in fact, no, there are many things that a person can do, and the disability only affects certain points. And there's a lot of past history and environmental factors that come into play that weren't originally looked at.
Yeah, and that's so important. Like, you and I were talking about this a little bit before the show. Like, I know how it affects me is, you know, I'm diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, which was classified as an AXIS 2, so it was thought to be untreatable. Now we know that it is treatable.
Right.
A lot of disorders that were thought to be untreatable, this person will never function in life, so on and so forth, we now know that's not necessarily the case.
Right. And sometimes the AXIS is, I mean, when you look at previous diagnosis and you look at the AXIS, it doesn't always mean that the AXIS is concrete. Usually that's where reevaluation comes in. Mm-hmm. And see, with the spectral disorders, it makes it a lot easier to bring about change, and it's easier to look at reevaluation because you're not so much focusing on the initial diagnosis, because people grow up, people change, people go through events in their lives where things just aren't as prevalent as they were before.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, all these classifications are going through major changes in both the DSM and now the ICD too. So some people might be asking, why was being transgender originally classified as a mental illness in the first place?
Because originally it was thought to be more of kind of like a choice. It was that when a person is born in a male body, they're supposed to develop the hormones and all of the things, the processes in the brain are supposed to say, this is male, here's what's going to happen, your body is going to go through this. But what happens is at some point there was the idea that there was just a mishap where the brain just stopped believing that, and the thought processes all changed and all that, and there became a very uncomfortable feeling, a very dissonant feeling within that person. And, you know, and when it was challenged, it became very frustrating for them. And so they believe that it was more of a psychological issue that was going on, not a body issue, because they thought that their discomfort was causing all of these problems. And so there was a lot of discussion, a lot of big head honchos getting together and going, okay, something is different here because my patient is completely healthy. There is nothing wrong with their mind. They are leading happy, normal lives and have had no issues, but their body is still rebelling against them. It's like they crave these changes. So we need to look at this.
Right. And, you know, a lot of just LGBTQ identities in general were misclassified in medicine for the longest time, just due to stigma and fear and misunderstanding, because our society wanted to see these things as wrong and not normal. And that's why homosexuality, too, it was also originally classified as a mental illness all the way up until 1974. And even then, they still had like a version of it in the DSM until like 1987. And it wasn't until 92 that the WHO finally decided to redefine it as not a disorder.
Right.
And, you know, now that we've had more studies done on transgender people, we're finding that, you know, there's lots of studies that have found transgender people typically have the brains of the gender they identify as. There are male brains, there are female brains, and there are even brains that are in between the two.
Okay, yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I want to talk about something called plasticity. So in the developmental stages of life, we have this thing called plasticity. Our brain cells, our neurons, are constantly making new connections, and all these little itty-bitty cells, hundreds and billions of them, are all connecting at once, and they're building these new neural pathways, and these little networks come together, and they build and continue to build. And see, when your body is doing something to where it's changing the flow of things, that plasticity is just a result. It's going to keep following. stress, socialism's presentation, anything that is that a person experiences helps build that plasticity. And so eventually, as that plasticity system starts to slow down a bit, you know, these changes begin to set in. And see, once these changes have set in, it's not exactly like they can just go back and change it at the snap of a hat. It takes reconditioning, which is not something we want to push people through.
Yeah, and you really can't you can't convert a transgender person back to being cisgender. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
Because at that point, their identity is solidly formed. You're not going to change their female brain back to a male brain or whatever you want to do.
Yeah,
it doesn't
no,
work. Out.
We can't do that. And no amount of straight camps and no amount of constant pressure is going to change that. You know, if your child or somebody that you know is identifying a certain way, it's not necessarily because that's how they think. How they think is a result of what's going on in their body and their brain and everything that is working together. Your body depicts a lot of what you do. You know, it is a complex system of sensory organs. It is a complex system of electrical impulses. All of these things that are going on in your body are what help influence how you do things.
Exactly. So why is being trans now considered a sexual health condition?
To be honest, I'm not entirely sure as to why the exact reason, but what I can say is that because it's more related to what the body is doing and less what the mind is doing, mm-hmm. it's more related to the hormones that are going through the system, to the impulses, to the productivity, to even things as to the way that the person walks, moves, involuntary reflexes. These are things that are changing in that person's body, and it's not necessarily a choice. It's not completely something of the brain just flips a switch and all of a sudden, hey, I want to be a woman. You know,
yeah.
It doesn't.
It's not that there's anything wrong with the brain. It's that the body does not match the brain. And so the body
right.
is what needs to be fixed.
Exactly. The body has to conform to what the brain does. And if the brain is different from the body,
yeah.
you know, you have.
And I think that this decision was largely made because of the stigma that trans people are still facing to this day from people who don't really understand it and are saying it's just a mental illness, because in the DSM it says gender dysphoria, blah, 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 and they don't even really understand
yeah.
what it means.
And here's the thing about a dysphoria. A dysphoria is not a primary problem. It is not a cause. It is a result. And that's the thing that people need to think about. When we go into diagnostics, we need to look at what the causes and the results are, but we need to look at the cause first. It's just like slapping a Band-Aid on a really bad cut. It's going to bleed through. It's going to keep bleeding. It's not going to, you know, if you need that kind of help, you have to go to the cause of it, the cut itself, not the Band-Aid. The Band-Aid isn't the problem.
Yeah. And so many people, like, they just see the words gender dysphoria in the DSM and they assume that, oh, it's a delusional disorder that makes you think you're something you're not. That's not what it is. It's a result of your brain not matching your body.
Right. And see, and that's the other thing, too. The word dysphoria, okay? A dysphoria is not a delusion. If it was, it would be called gender delusion disorder.
Right.
Okay. A dysphoria is a result where the person's visual impulses and the things that they are seeing are not matching of what's going on. And so it's not quite what's going on, and it's more of a feeling. It's not necessarily, you know, a complete belief system. That happens later on. Dysphoria does cause different beliefs, but it's a process. It's a chemical process, and people need to understand that somebody who is identifying as a gender not of what they were born as is not simply just a choice. It is how you feel.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Did you have a question?
I do. So I'm wondering, if that's true, then how do we have the conversation about gender non-binary and gender fluid? Because I'm just trying to think of a theoretical framework for this discussion, because gender non-binary is a huge part of the community now.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, like, so if you're gender non-binary, does that mean that there's also an innate ability within the body to not identify with any gender and simply to just be a body that isn't attached to a gender identity?
Unfortunately, psychologically, the non-binary is just it's an identity. It is not necessarily that the body is going to morph between female or male or anything like that. It is how to identify somebody who does not actually even fit in between them. Or like, for example, commonly people who are non-binary that I have personally known have been born with some form of intersex disorder. I myself have born with Klinefelter syndrome, and so when I go through my life, I identify as non-binary because there are parts of my body that are not male, and there are parts of my body that are not female, and things just don't always feel right. And so I identify with that because it's in between, and I feel better that way when I can identify as non-binary. Gender fluid is more of moving between male and moving between female, and you're kind of rocking back and forth, and some days you'll feel male or more masculine, and some days you'll feel more feminine, whereas non-binary is there isn't just masculine or isn't just feminine. There's just, it's kind of all around.
Well, and gender fluid is also under the non-binary umbrella, and that brings up a point I wanted to talk about. There was actually a study I read done on gender fluid people where they studied the brains of them, and they found that the neurochemical processes moved back and forth between typical of a male brain and typical of a female brain. So there is scientific basis that gender fluid is a real thing.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was also going to say, to address Emma's question, there's a lot of different ways to identify as non-binary. Oh, yeah. Like, I'm not intersex, like you were talking about, but I do feel that I should be part male and part female. Or there are people who just feel that they should have no gender, you know?
Right. Let's, we had actually talked about this before the show. An example would be, let's do the non-binary as an umbrella. Purple. This person sees purple as mauve. This person sees purple as the ultra purple of darkness. This person sees purple as a light lavender. Okay, it's still purple. It's just purple. But it's perception, a perception of reality, and their basis of that perception, it's how they choose to look at it. That is it's just who you are. It is not something that can be used to use against other people. It's not something that can be used to identify an exact trait of somebody. It's just who they are.
Great. You know, that's helpful.
So I'm just wondering then, when we talk about transgender, we talk about an individual who wants to change their body one way or another to fit into the binary, and I'm talking in general here.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like when you get off into what we're talking about, non-binary and stuff, we're talking about, so there's really not a physical aspect to that, right? I mean, this is more...
It depends. For example, a person who is transitioning from a male body to a female body does not still necessarily mean that they are still identifying as just that specific gender. That can still change. You know, a person who is non-binary can still identify as something else other than what their body says. And whether they're transitioning that physically versus mentally, it's a different story.
Yeah, I know non-binary people who are like transitioning fully to the opposite sex. I know non-binary people who are only partially transitioning in some way. And I know non-binary people like myself who aren't transitioning at all. It doesn't make you any less trans because the only real definition of being trans is not identifying with your assigned sex.
Exactly. Transgender is defined as one's identity does not match that of the identity assigned at birth. A man who is trans does not have to identify with being a man because he was born with male genitalia. And so that's something important. For example, real quick here, I attempted to go through transition a couple of times and I couldn't because I'm diabetic type 1, and unfortunately estrogen is an insulin killer. And there are a lot of things, and I have a lot of complications because, let's just face it, and I'm admitting this on public radio, I don't take very good care of my diabetes. And due to this, I am now no longer ever going to be able to transition currently. Maybe some technology will come out in the future that will help me with that, but currently I can't. I still identify as non-binary. I was born with male parts at birth, the Klinefelters came in other areas that are not exactly, you know, showing on my body on the outside. But I don't always feel like I'm a man. And so I also don't always feel like I'm a woman either. It's just kind of in between. I am who I am. I'm just a human.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's a really good transition point. So why don't we take our second break and then we'll come back and get more into some of the other parts of this discussion.
Okay. Sounds good.
I felt all flushed with fever, embarrassed by the crowd. I felt he found my letters and read each one out loud. I prayed that he would finish, but he just kept right on strumming my pain with his fingers.
Hey, back on. All right, we are back. Thank you so much. This has been such an interesting conversation. So we're back for the second half of Transpositive. We're so lucky today. We have Shamai here with us talking about bashing the binary and getting into the really deep stuff of what is transgender? How do you describe it psychologically? How do you talk about gender binary and also kind of moving away from gender binary? And I think now we're going to be talking a little bit about intersex and some other stuff. So
yeah, well, before we get to that, there was a point that I wanted to talk about when we were talking about the new decision to reclassify transgender as a sexual health condition. Don't worry about that. Do you think that this new classification will make it easier to for trans people to seek health care, especially hormonal and surgical treatment?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Oh, sorry. Do you think that the new decision by the World Health Organization, do you think that could help trans people have better access to health care and especially hormonal and surgical treatment?
I do, because eliminating it as a psychological disorder takes away that ability for someone to say this is simply a choice. And it may not completely prevent, but it will definitely prevent a lot of tons of psych evals, tons of videos watching why this is different and why it's wrong. It takes away from the ability to say that that you're against this or that. No, it's just this is how a person's body is working. This may actually help push treatment further to actually open up studies in ways that we have never even thought of before. There's a monumental amount of stress in this community when it comes to this sort of problem because people don't listen to the idea that a person's body is a person's body. You can't just simply change that at the drop of a hat. You can't. It is extremely difficult, and there are very few people who have been able to change their bodies with the power of their own mind. And I mean like people who have been under studies for a long time, such as the Tibetan monks.
I was going to say the Tibetan monks. Yeah. Those are like the only people I can think
of. I'm pretty sure that 90% or even more of our community are not Tibetan monks. and that we don't have the power to sit there and say, I am now going to grow parts to my body right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to be honest, Shamai, that as I'm an atheist, and I don't really believe that it's possible for people to just grow parts of their body just by thinking about it.
Right.
I mean, I know people who are active in the Tibetan community, and I know people who practice pretty deep meditation who believe that things like, I mean, I've heard all kinds of stories. Just like, I mean, I practice Judaism, but I'm an atheist, and within there are some people who go into the mystical direction, mm-hmm. and I totally respect that. I'm not saying that what you're saying isn't true.
Oh no,
I'm
no, just, no.
I just want to acknowledge. Okay, great.
I think you misheard. I wasn't. Okay. I was saying the growing the parts of the body thing is meaning we can't just command our bodies to do things. What I'm saying is that growing parts is impossible. What Tibetan monks do, I'm talking about, is meditation and being able to slow down and help their bodies do different things. things. I'm not talking about growing parts.
I see.
I'm talking about growing parts as kind of an example of we can't do that.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, that's a belief. That's not necessarily a fact.
Well.
Of what?
Yeah.
Of anything. That's right. Just to be clear, it's like you're talking about the mystical Tibetan. There's a lot of things that go on out there that average people in America don't hear about. But
right.
So just for the conversation, that's the idea that we can't do something is a belief.
Right. I just saying. Yeah,
I
think we're getting caught up on the Tibetan monk thing rather than what I'm trying to say, which is scientifically, we cannot magically make our brains tell our bodies to do something that it can't do. That's what I'm saying. Psychologically, it is not a disorder because we cannot sit there and make a choice that our bodies are going to change in an instant. We cannot do that.
But this gets to a really interesting part of the conversation too, which is that like part of our gender dysphoria is about wanting our bodies to be something that maybe they weren't necessarily born with physically.
Right.
And even when we do go through those changes, like I know some of us in here have gone through those changes. I mean, our bodies still can't do some things.
Right.
And as medical science changes, maybe they can. Like, I can't give birth.
Right.
I would love to give birth.
They're trying to come up with a way to do that.
I've always wanted to do that, but I can't do it right now. If I was born going in the other direction where I had been born with a female body, but I had wanted to be a man, I may not be able to father a child.
Right.
But they're getting close with the help of medical science.
Exactly.
But even, I mean, the things that are happening right now are positive and they're very affirming. But I may not know that my experience as a trans woman is the same as a cis woman. Like, say, for instance, having sex. Like,
right.
I wouldn't know necessarily that my experience as a trans woman would feel the same as a cis woman's experience who had been born with that kind of a body. And I'd like to see us get to a point somewhere in our society where that's a reality.
Right.
But right now, it's just these are kind of like tools to help trans folks get closer to that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's something that's important about what's going on right now is we may only be at the stage, and some people may find it even discouraging that things haven't been set in concrete stone and the experiences aren't the same as they want them to be, but that's not a reason to give up hope. We need to look at this as a step forward. This is not the step, this is a step. And we need to look at that and understand that we may be hitting a hump and we may have just made a small little pathway. It's important to look at that small little pathway and see the many avenues that it opens.
Can I ask another question?
Go ahead.
Okay. So another question I want to ask you, Shamai,
mm-hmm.
is so I've been listening to a lot of I'm always listening to the community talk, so mm-hmm. I've been hearing lots of people. And so I was trying to prepare for our conversation tonight by kind of going at it from a pretty far angle of saying gender is completely a social construction. Now, I don't believe that gender is totally a social construction, but I am a feminist, and I'm not just a feminist. I mean, I'm a radical feminist. Mm-hmm. I'm obviously not a trans-excluding radical feminist, but I am a radical feminist, and I do believe that much of what gender is in our society, how as gender is seen and perceived, is a social construction basically designed to do what, like, for instance, the current administration is doing, which is trying to disempower women. And so I believe that part of what we need to do with the culture writ large is really bash the gender binary. We need to get rid of the idea that women do this and men do that.
Right.
And that's a basis for power.
So
how do we have that conversation?
So we're going to get into what we call gender role socialization.
Okay.
So gender role socialization is what happens when a person of in the developing stages goes through a culture that specifically has gender norms and roles. boys are to play with cars and trucks and are to learn mechanics, and girls are supposed to learn cooking and be a housewife and all that. That is a socialization that happens. Yes, you're right. It is a construct. It is what happens when in our society where men are supposed to fit this and females are supposed to fit that. We're in a changing time right now. That no longer applies, and it is scaring and angering a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And right now, that is something that we have to continue fighting. We have loosened the ropes a bit. And right now, they've got the people up very high trying to re-strengthen those ropes, but we've got to keep chopping down at them. This is something we must keep fighting for. No matter what they throw at us, we have to fight this. It is no longer applicable, and it is time that people knew that.
I agree. And I think this is a perfect way to segue into our evidence that gender is not just, it's not a binary. Because if we're talking about gender as a social construct, most ancient cultures before the widespread of Christianity, almost all cultures all over the world had at least three genders as a regular part of their culture.
And some even no genders at all. Back in the ancient Roman days when it came to roles and sexuality, there was no necessarily role or sexuality. This is before the influence of the Roman Catholic Church. We're talking like, you know, the arena days. but there was in sexuality, it was, I'm attracted to you. I'm attracted to you too. Cool. You know, and there was no such thing as a woman must do this or a man must do this. They had female soldiers, they had male soldiers, they had male soldiers that worked together. They had people. They didn't care. There wasn't a role for it. Then, as time went on, people started developing these roles because they were afraid that some. And I apologize here if I offend anybody, but they're afraid that the magic sky daddy is going to send a lightning bolt down at them because they didn't do a specific or fit a specific box.
And in my opinion, I believe that gender as a construct, the way it is constructed today, was developed specifically as a way to have power over some people, keep other people under control,
yes.
Specifically women and feminine people, because femininity in our society is seen as bad. Masculinity is seen as good. It's a way of keeping control and keeping power.
Yes. The way that we can talk about that is it goes back to kind of the much more ancient days when you know, the people were paying more attention to how the bodies worked and not so much that, see, before society became much a big thing, there were small roles. Women typically were gatherers and men were typically hunters. The problem is as time went on, they still paid attention to that rather than saying, wait a minute, a woman can do this. A woman can do the same thing that I can. That's not okay. You know, and that's when they started doing this. And they have kept that construction the entire way through. And now that we have finally evolved to the point where we realize that hasn't been applicable for a really long time. Why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. Hold on just a second. Accessing directory. You know, it's why are we doing this? We have had no need to do this for a very long time. A particular part of a woman's body performs differently. Oh my. Why? Oh, okay. Yeah, there's no reason why, because of that specific body part, that a woman should have a specific role. There is no reason for that. Yes, it takes two to tango, but both have to do different, but eventually it comes together as one unified work.
Right. And also, I mean, I think it's important to think not just about how gender identity plays with regard to just two people, but it's also, I mean, thinking about how gender identity works like within an entire group or a community.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about thousands and hundreds of thousands of people, the idea of gender is a convenient way to categorize people, but it—I mean—it's not really accurate at all.
Yeah, in fact,
and it's quite oppressive.
Yeah, it is very oppressive, and in fact, there is not nearly enough evidence to say that a specific gender role has any impact really on society. In fact, the gender roles have created a lack of impact, or excuse me, not a lack of impact, a lack of positive thinking, a lack of progressive movement, that to the point to where a man can't, like, you go to a fast food restaurant, you walk into McDonald's and you see that the men have a specific uniform and the females have another specific uniform. The females' uniforms are very uncomfortable, they're hot, they're, you know, there isn't a lot of things, or they're ultra revealing. It seems to move into a point of yeah. sex, which
and
is another form of control.
Kind of baggy and
yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and they want you to mystify it and ooh, what's in there? It doesn't. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing, is maybe to some people they still think like that, but overall, it's not a. It so, doesn't work.
So in some ways, gender is almost more of a performance.
Yes, it's a performance. It's if we want to get down to the nitty gritty of it, of what is basically going on in a person's brain outside of any form of intelligence, eat, sleep, potty, and sex. So, yeah,
that's great. Why don't we take our final break, and then we'll come back and kind of wrap up this conversation.
Man, I'm out in Texas. Man, I'm out in A-Town. Then I'm up in Chi-Town. Or Miami shutting down. It's that New Orleans. It's L.A. or the Bay. It's New York, Philly. And the whole DMV. I'm a Detroit player. Man, it's North-South Cat. Ohio, Pittsburgh. Got St. Louis on deck. It's Delaware, Connecticut. It's New Jersey. Got hella It's Queens, Brooklyn. And yeah, they round.
And you can keep talking if you want.
That's fine.
So we're going to be wrapping up this about 10 more minutes with this conversation. And the very end of the show, we need about 5 minutes because we're going to be honoring someone in the community who's
okay,
passed away.
That sounds good. One last little thing I wanted to touch on that last part is understanding the gender constructs is ultimately it is a form of control when we force people in a box. What happens all throughout history? What happens when you put a group of people in a box and basically say bad, bad, bad? What do they do? What is the natural thing they do?
They rebel.
Exactly. And that is the natural part.
Well, that's if you have a problem with being in that box.
And all of us who are stuck within a box do have that problem.
I am female and I love it. And anybody who wants to take it away from me is going to be in big trouble.
Always the troublemaker.
Right. Well,
but
would you?
You're comfortable.
Okay. Okay.
You are comfortable, yeah. Which is good. That's well, right. Perfect. Yes,
one could argue, though, originally people tried to put you in the box of trying to tell you that you're a male, and that's obviously not true.
You didn't like that box.
Yeah, you didn't like that box, so now you're in the right true. Box.
Yeah.
You made the change. You rebelled, and you made the change to something that was perfect.
Right, but I am in the gender I want to be in, that I'm meant to be in, that all fits for me.
Exactly.
And it's like,
yes.
You're in it now.
Great.
I am in it now.
Yes.
But
yes.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Correct.
Yeah.
But that's the point.
That's why you're in you're in the right box now.
You're in the right
box.
What we're talking about is those who have wrongfully been placed in the wrong boxes.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Which applies to all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wrapping things up, we've talked about different types of evidence that gender is not a binary. It's a very large spectrum. We've got, on the psychological lens, studies have proven that there are male brains, female brains, and even brains that are in between male and female, or that move between male and female. Sociologically, we have many different cultures all over the world who have had at least three genders, if not more, for thousands and thousands of years. And then biologically, there isn't just two sexes either.
Exactly. There's intersex, which is extremely important. Klinefelter syndrome, that's one of them. In fact, in Polynesia, there is a tribe of people that have a rare genetic condition where their SRY gene, the androgen, was suppressed, and it mutated at the when they reached puberty. At the age of 12, women started growing male parts. And they classify it as a third gender within their culture because they're not male, they're not female, they're in between.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of different intersex conditions too. So you could argue there's a wide spectrum of sex too. Sex is a spectrum. Gender is a spectrum. There is no way to classify these things as a binary.
Exactly. And that's why we're trying to move the DSM into a spectral program. We are not trying to put things in a box anymore because the box eventually, what the contents inside outgrow it.
Mm-hmm. And transgender doesn't even belong in the DSM anymore because it's not a mental health disorder.
And I agree.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great. This has been a really good conversation. So I have a couple of questions for you. I think when we when we were talking about this before the show, and I know we've kind of had this conversation, so we already sort of answered it in a way, but I want to kind of revisit it because I think it's really important.
Yeah.
So when you have, this is more of a conversation about what's going on within the community between transgender and gender non-binary. Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes, like what Gwen was saying, and I think I've definitely heard this before too, like transgender people who are transitioning their gender oftentimes feel like they're moving from over here to over here. And so that's something that, like, they feel like there's an over here to come to. And now there's, like, gender non-binary is kind of like the whole thing now. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, all the younger generations, they're all gender non-binary. And Oregon, just this last month, was the second state to offer gender non-binary as a classification mm-hmm. on driver's license and on state ID documents, which yeah. is huge. It's a huge victory for the yeah. community.
And it is.
But is there any, like, place, like, where this could be conflict? Like I think that for some folks, like, I mean, I can think of an analog conversation. So, yeah. like, back in the day, people used to say, like queer folks, like gay men or lesbians were, like, you know, there was something wrong with them. And they did all this work to kind of, like, get to this point where, like, they were accepted as gay and lesbian. And then, like, transgender folks come along. And some people, like, will say, oh, that's, like, people will incorrectly, like, say that the trans folks are sort of trying to undermine what gay and lesbian folks were doing, you know, through, like, their own identities. And now, like, gender non-binary is coming along. And I think some trans people feel a little bit, just, they feel a little threatened by gender non-binary.
All right. So, yes. Socially, it depends. It all is on the person. It all depends on the person's perception. Like I said earlier, earlier. Purple, mauve, lavender. Right. Okay. So, it's just, here's the thing. When it comes to progression, we've reached a certain stage. Does that mean we stop there? Or do we continue pushing to better humanity in general?
We keep pushing.
We keep pushing. I'm pushing. It's about acceptance of it all. Male, female, non-binary, doesn't have to be non-binary, doesn't have to be cis, it doesn't have to be any of these things. That is all just a person's opinion on whether, and it's about accepting. We as humans have a duty to learn to live with each other and to accept things as they are, and to not purposely try to control things that are beyond our control. And to progress in a way that is allowing that acceptance and allowing these changes to happen. Humans over thousands of years hate change. They can't stand it. And every time you get a person who stands up for something and says, this needs to change, everyone goes, no, 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 no. But what they realize is if they accept that this change is something that needs to happen, it's time.
Right.
Yeah.
And eventually things do change, and then there's a new normal, and then somebody sees the next thing, which is how we progress.
Yeah, and change is inevitable. And just because non-binary people are valid does not mean that binary trans people are any less valid. We are all valid, and we all need to accept each other and work together in order to overcome the oppression that's working against all of us.
Exactly. Right. Validation is to move forward. Invalidation is to reverse.
Totally.
And then there's the label. To get back to what you were saying, in the community, post-op, trans, I'll bet you there's a lot of people that are in the binary.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably one of them. And I'm okay with anybody who's non-binary.
Mm-hmm. Or
I don't really care. I don't necessarily want to share the same label.
You don't have to. A label is a label.
Yeah.
No, but a label is an identifier. And mm-hmm. that's one of the things in our culture and in our society that we work with.
Right, but just because...
It's an identifier, and it's like, if you don't want an identifier, that's fine with me. I want one because I want a person who may be mm-hmm. interested in me to know my physical attributes, you know, are like this,
well,
or like this
yes.
is kind of where I'm coming from, and it's like... So it's not just a label. And to minimize that, I mean, from a scientific, you know, idea, it is a label. No problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
But from a personal identifier, what I want my label to be expressed as who I am is as important to me as it is to you. to be non-binary.
So Gwen, we just got a couple minutes left.
So just my one little response to that, I accept that. Mm-hmm. And that's the answer that it should always be, is I accept that. I accept that you want to be identified, that you want that. That is completely okay. There has never been an issue. As a non-binary person, I have never, ever had an issue with there being a label. Just because I identify doesn't mean that you do, and I would love to be friends with you.
Mm-hmm. Great. So closing thoughts, Nicolette, Shemai?
I think we covered a lot tonight. Where do I even start? I think we are moving in the right direction of society beginning to understand that these boxes they're trying to put us in do not work for everybody. And we all need to keep banding together, non-binary and binary trans people, in order to fight our oppression and in order to be the people that we feel we are supposed to be and live the way we feel we're supposed to live.
Shmai,
mm-hmm.
Do you have any closing thoughts?
No, other than saying that again, acceptance. Don't ever give up hope. Band together with your fellow people. Love each other. Be there for one another. And in the darkest moments, hold strong and fight against those that would oppress us.
Wow, this is so great. Wait, before we came in studio tonight, you were nervous.
Uh huh.
But you did such a great job. It's
well, thank
like,
you.
You did great. So
I think we had a really powerful conversation here tonight.
Yeah. Thank
Yay.
You. So, with the last couple of minutes of the show, I wanted to take some time out. I promised that I was going to do this to honor someone in our community. There was a trans woman who killed herself a few weeks ago. Down in Chapman in front of the courthouse. And her name was Chloe. And I'm not going to go into detail about the way that she died because it was really awful. But Chloe was a very passionate and caring and loving person who, for her last act on earth, was really concerned about what was happening with immigrant children and what was happening with homelessness in the community and also what was happening with mental health treatment. And a friend of mine actually witnessed her die. And another friend got in touch with us on Transgender Oregon Network and sent me this memorial to Chloe, who did kill herself this month. And so I'm just going to read this memorial that she sent, acknowledging Chloe and acknowledging her gifts of life. Her name was Jasmine, who wrote this remembrance of Chloe. And Jasmine says, "One of my favorite memories of Chloe was how excited she was to show me the court order signed by a judge with her real name on it. She made it clear to me that Chloe was a mononym, and that true to her nature, the first and last names she wrote on the form were a shaken fist of authority. I have a lot of wonderful memories of Chloe, like the way she got along with our dogs, especially Petey, or the dreamlike and haunting art that she produced, or the strange but tasty food experiments she introduced me to. But that particular one seems especially important, remembering her as respectfully and accurately as possible. Chloe, you were loved more than I think you knew." So that was written by Jasmine on June 21st in memory of Chloe. And unfortunately, this is the second month in a row that we've had to acknowledge or remember a transgender person who was either murdered or who committed suicide in our community. And hopefully we won't have any more this year. So Chloe, this is in honor of you. And if anyone in the community is feeling like they need some love or support, please get in touch with us. You can reach us down here at KBOO. You can also write to us at TransPositive. You can go to the Q Center, and there's lots of people down there who will support you. Just please, if you need support, if you need some love, there's lots of avenues for you, and we're all around here, and we want to help you, and we want to love you and support you, because we don't want to do this another month.
Do we also have the number for the transgender suicide hotline?
I'll make sure that gets in the show notes.
Okay.
And we'll make sure every month now for the rest of this season to say that at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were several numbers. There were several numbers and groups in the community.
Yeah. So that's it for tonight. We will see you next month for another episode of Transpositive. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6:59, and next will be a calculated conversation. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio and the Jazz Society of Oregon are thrilled to present the 38th annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, July 20th, 21st, and 22nd at Cathedral Park in North Portland. The weekend starts with blues on Friday night. Norman Sylvester, Reggie Houston, and the Northwest Women Rhythm and Blues will be there. Saturday and Sunday will include Becky Kilgore, the Quadrophones, Tahira Memory, Randy Porter with Nancy King, a Ray Charles Review, and more. That's the 38th annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Portland's longest-running community event, July 20th, 21st, and 22nd, under the St. John's Bridge in North Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Keys, Beats, Bars community discussion on Sunday, July 8th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. Keys, Beats, Bars is a music program for incarcerated youth. This community discussion will be about how music empowerment can bring the community together, and to learn about volunteer opportunities and general information about Keys, Beats, Bars, Morpheus Youth Project, Liberation Literary, and many others. Again, that's the Keys, Beats, Bars community discussion on Sunday, July 8th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center.